WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The English songwriting team of lyricist Chris Difford and composer Glenn Tilbrook has been compared to Lennon and McCartney and Lieber and Stoller. Difford and Tilbrook have written and performed together since the mid-70s, when they formed the group Squeeze. Elvis Costello and John Cale each produced records by Squeeze. The band split up in 1982 and reformed in 1985. Squeeze is currently on a U.S. tour, performing songs from their new album, Frank. From Frank, this is The Last Time. About writing The Last Time.
Subject matter interested me because it's about how you can basically mess up relationships just through sort of being a bit of a slob. I don't know how you'd interpret that. Chris, Patrick, give me your opinion.
I think that's a pretty good opinion, actually.
Glenn, what do you think about when you're handed a set of lyrics and are about to set a melody to it?
In an ideal world, as little as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I write Chris's lyrics, what I try and do is to not read them before I sit down in front of a piano and a guitar. I always sort of work on both whenever I'm doing a tune to one of Chris's lyrics. And if everything goes really, really sweetly, something will tumble out and it'll all be over in half an hour and I'll be pleased with the result. Much more often than that, though, it's a process of actually sitting down and working. And I do try and keep to, you know, 7 or 8 hours a day of writing, because I think that if I look back over the most of the stuff that we've done, 90% of it has been something that has evolved through having worked at trying to get an idea and then the idea sparking off inspiration.
Glenn, you sing lead on The Last Time?
Yes, I sing lead for half the time, then Chris sings with me. We've got that sort of octave sound, Chris being the lower one.
How did you start singing that way? It's a distinctive sound that you've had, you know, on and off through all of your records, I think.
Well, it's one of those things that we actually stumbled on after we first started singing together, was that given any sort of known melody, and at the time we were playing quite a few other people's songs, that we'd gravitate towards a different octave. But it actually worked singing together that way, so we didn't really think about it, it just sort of happened that way.
So I guess your range is about an octave apart from each other too?
Pretty much so, yeah.
Pretty much so, yeah.
You both stayed together after Squeeze broke up. Now Squeeze is back together again, but there was a period of time when you were just a duo. Why did you want to stay together when the other members of the group wanted to split?
Well, to be quite fair, I don't think the rest of the group did want to split at the time. I think it was Chris and I that decided that we'd had enough of the band, and we didn't really consult the rest of the members about it,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't entirely fair, but that's the way we did it at the time. Having said that, I think the band did need to split up at that time. It was sounding a bit tired, and we'd been working for 5 or 6 years straight without really having any sort of breaks. And Chris and I didn't—I don't think we felt that we'd really exhausted our possibilities together. We wanted to stay together and do some other things, so we went on and did a musical. We did our fabulously successful Difford and Tilbrook album, which at the time, about a quarter of an hour ago, I'm told, went triple platinum in the States. It's been only double platinum up until now. That was a good couple of years, you know, where we've sort of basically sat around South London rather than going on tour. And I think it's called recharging your batteries or getting a new loaf of bread or something.
You've been working together since, I think it's 1973. Can you tell the story of how you first met up?
Well, I met Glenn through putting an advert in a shop window for a guitar player to join a band, which was totally fictitious. There wasn't a band at all. And Glenn was the only person who answered the advert. And
some stiff competition.
Yeah.
Well, it was in a shop window alongside other cards selling things like, or saying things like, a kitten for sale or birthday cakes made. I mean, you wouldn't find many, I don't suppose, people looking in there for a job in the first place, because it was, normally if you're looking for people to join a band, if it's not word by mouth, then you put your name and details in the Melody Maker, English Music Press.
Well, why did you choose to put the ad up on this bulletin board that advertised for, you know, available kittens instead of going to the Melody Maker?
Because he's a complete weirdo. No other way around it. I mean, I've rung up and he said, all right, let's meet. And he said, I'll have a copy of this local paper underneath my arm. So I went looking for this guy with the local paper under his arm, and I saw him, but I thought, you know, why didn't he tell me he'd have a multicoloured Lurex coat on? That would be far easier to identify. But no, he stuck to the newspaper.
What kinds of bands had you both worked with before?
Well, I'd done some work with Jimi Hendrix and, and the Beatles and T-Rex particularly. They were good, but they're all on records in my bedroom, so... But no actual bands.
Really?
Yeah, really, no.
But I mean, both of you?
No, I had been in one band after leaving school, which was formed in the art class, and... We used to play sort of songs that lasted about 20 minutes. And I remember getting some silver grease paint and putting it all over my face once. And then wearing a boiler suit to try and look like Pete Townsend.
Well, that was just a couple of years ago.
And I sweated all the grease paint onto the bass because I was playing bass at the time. And, of course, my fingers just slipped on and off of the frets. Of course, nobody noticed at the time.
When you were first starting to record in the mid to late 70s, it was... Well, it was a period of punk rock in England, and you were playing pop. Did you feel like you were going against the grain of the time?
Oh, let me think that one over now. Well, it's interesting because at the time that we first started doing gigs, 75 was when we sort of first got a series of dates, we were playing backup to bands that were... playing 20-minute songs, much like Chris's first band. You know, chaps in silver-painted faces and boiler suits trying to look like Pete Townsend. And the audiences would all be sitting on the floor, and we could never quite figure out why they'd do that. And we'd play our 3-minute songs. And admittedly, you know, I'm not painting an overly rosy picture. We'd play about 35 3-minute songs, but, you know, and by the 10th, they'd be bored, sick, and ready for the main band. But we never were into those sort of... We were always basically a pop band, I think.
Well, let me ask you about one of your early records. This is from 1978, Take Me, I'm Yours. What kind of sound were you going for then?
We were very interested at the time in getting some of the new technology in to work with. And if I remember rightly, nobody had any, so we had to hire in a guy who had some and knew how to use things. And... I remember Glenn would sit behind him and say, you know, we'd like this kind of rhythm and we'd like that kind of sequence. And he'd sort of, you know, spend about an hour pressing all these buttons and then the rhythm track would start.
It was basically hire everything we could possibly get in and then find a place to use it on. I remember particularly, if we're going to play Take Me On Yours, listen to the guitar solo and think that I'm plugged into a Moog synthesizer. There's this man who's come in with all his equipment for a day, turning the knobs as I play, and I thought... It's a wonderful moment, lodged in my memory forever. Amusing belly dancers distract me from a wide across Tibetan mountains and memories of mine. I've stood some ghostly moments in natives in the hills, recorded here on paper. My chills and thrills and spills. Take me, I'm yours, because dreams are made.
you're on a tour of the States now. You've been on other tours of the States, and I'm sure you played here when your careers were just getting started as Squeeze. What's the difference between playing here now that you've been around for a few years and when you were getting started? Are you still playing the same kinds of places?
No, obviously we're not, because when we first came over here, we were playing, I remember we played to two men and a dog in a club in Dover, New Jersey, and we were doing lots of clubs like that that weren't really ready, well, not ready for us, but I mean, they weren't, you know, they were used to having either country and western bands in, or bands that were doing cover versions of Baker Street or Kink songs or whatever, you know, Beatles songs. So we were playing those kind of bars. And now we've sort of graduated to colleges, and we do, which is what we're doing on this tour. And we're playing to four men and a dog now instead of three. And we're playing Madison Square Gardens for the third time. So we've sort of come up a bracket.
Well, I thank you both very much for talking with us.
Thank you
very much.